Welcome to The Gathering Podcast, a ministry of First United Methodist Church in downtown Bentonville, Arkansas. My name is Ken Weatherford, the Director of Worship Arts here at the church, and as always, it's great to be with you. We hope you enjoy this week's episode of our weekly sermon podcast and ask that you would do us a favor and please share this with your friends and family on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us at www.fumcbentonville.org or by searching FUMC Gathering Podcast on iTunes.
I want to lay out the broad spectrum of our worship service this morning, or at least the sermon. In the next 18 minutes, we're going to cover analog watches, atheists hooked up to lie detector machines, the art of T.S. Eliot, the art of members of our congregation, chapters 5 and 6 of Leviticus, and confession. Now, it's a big mission, and we will accomplish that mission, and everybody here who's old enough to have an analog watch knows what we must do to accomplish our mission, right? On my mark, synchronized watches. 3, 2, 1. Curtis DeYoung, he is a pastor as well as a theologian, a professor, an author. He has spent his life working on racial reconciliation. When he speaks of forgiveness being analogous to resurrection, he really caught my attention. And I use that word analogous specifically. We could have said resurrection and forgiveness are similes. We could have said there's a metaphor there. But no, I think analog is a much better word. An analog is a physical measure of something that's difficult to see. An analog watch, the hands physically marking the passage of time. An analog speedometer, if you still have those in your cars, measuring the passage of the velocity, the momentum of your vehicle. I offer you today the perspective that forgiveness is the very analog for the presence of God. A good friend of mine, retired pastor, said, "Eric, it doesn't matter how long the people in your congregation have been worshiping God. When they come to you on Sunday morning, they want you to tell them one thing and one thing only. They want you to tell them that God is real. That God is real. We come to worship so that we might experience God. Some weeks are fantastic weeks, and we have no doubt. Some weeks get really difficult, and we wonder, is God real?" There was a study done in Finland in 2013, because this is an important question in Finland, where over half of the people in Finland claim to be atheists. They say God is not real. A group of psychologists got together to study whether that is just something that people say, or whether deep inside they truly believe it. So they came up with a series of questions, and they pulled together a group of people that said they were atheists, and they pulled together a group of people that said they were Christians, and they asked them the same set of questions. And they started with fairly simple questions, and they got more and more challenging. As they got more and more challenging, they started to say things like, "Well, if you're an atheist, you won't mind saying, 'God, I dare you to give my dad a heart attack today. God, I dare you to fill my body with cancer.'" Well, it's easy to say. I'm an atheist. I can say that. The Christians in the room very quickly said, no, not going there. The psychologists then did what psychologists do. They really pushed the envelope. They brought in lie detector machines, hooked up the atheists to the equipment and said, "Answer the same questions." To a person, every single one of the persons said the words. But as they did, their heart rate increased, their blood pressure went up, and they started sweating. The behavior wasn't matching what was said. Now, we can point fingers at atheists and say, see, they actually believe. This is proof. Not necessarily. Because as you all know, when we have one finger pointing out, we have four fingers pointing back, right? There's a challenge and a problem with Christians as well, is often we wear the same masks. The atheist wears a mask, a well-earned mask, by the way, because Atheism is actually a very new phenomenon. It did not exist 200, 300 years ago. Atheism developed out of the wars mostly caused by religion. People saying, if that's where God is, I want nothing to do with it. Doesn't mean they deep inside don't recognize that God must be there. But if that's what God is, I want nothing to do with it. Christians, on the other hand, often put on a mask that say, I'm a Christian. Unfortunately, the behavior doesn't always match the words we say. And while we may put on the mask that says Christian, deep inside, opposite of the atheist, we wonder, is God real? Is God really there? Well, today, I give you an analog. I give you a way for measuring whether God is present in our lives, in our church, in our community, in our country. The analog is forgiveness. If we want to measure the presence of God in our lives, we measure the occurrence of forgiveness and we accept the power of that forgiveness in transforming our lives. Now, we're going to explore forgiveness in a number of ways today. The first, I'd like to begin with the art of T.S. Eliot, and then we will get to the oil and acrylic art of members of our congregation. T.S. Eliot, 1930, completed perhaps, in my opinion, his greatest poem, a poem called Ash Wednesday. It's a very long poem. It's a short story, really. Six movements. It's a movement that you would expect on Ash Wednesday. A person feeling like they've fallen into the dust and ash of despair. God is nowhere to be found. And throughout the poem, Eliot slowly starts to experience God. From the fifth movement, chapter 5. See, do we have this up on the screen? It's so incredible. I want you to see the words. If the lost word is lost, if the spent word is spent, if the unheard, unspoken word is unspoken, unheard, still is the unspoken word, the word unheard. The world, the word without a word. The word within, the world for the world, and the light shone in the darkness, and against the word, the unstilled world, still world, about the center of the silent word. O my people, what have I done unto thee? Where shall the word be found? Where will the word resound? Not here. There is not enough silence. Not on the sea or on the islands, not on the mainland or the desert or the rainland, for those who walk in darkness, both in the daytime and the nighttime, the right time, the right place are not here. No place of grace for those who avoid the face, no time to rejoice for those who walk among the noise and deny the voice. That center verse, O my people, what have I done unto thee? It's caused me to pause and meditate on those words for a long time. I hear, O my people, what have I done unto thee? I require you to search for me in silence. I require for you to grope for me in darkness. I require that you make a concerted effort to mature, to grow up, to forgive, to confess, to develop a relationship with me. I require you step out in faith. I can't spoon feed you forever. Oh, my people, I require that you work hard to develop a relationship with me. Oh, my people, what have I done unto thee? When I received this painting from Scott White, I thought he gave them to me out of order. Said, Scott, is this one really forgiveness or is this temptation? He said, Eric, you aren't understanding my metaphor. This is forgiveness. I said, oh, okay, I get it. Forgiveness is the pot of gold. Forgiveness is when we're digging in our backyard, planting a tree, And we find that. That is the gift that God offers us. So from one perspective, imagining what forgiveness is. Scott told me that of the five verses that he had to paint, he thought and he thought and he thought and he thought about what forgiveness would look like. And finally, he came up with a treasure chest. I asked that the artists all to start doing this back in April, May. They had lots of time to think. Reverend Sarah Bainbridge, meditating on what forgiveness looks like, going through her weeks, thinking about forgiveness, standing in a kitchen. Now, I'm making a little bit of an assumption, Sarah. I don't know if this is exactly what happened, but she did tell me what this image is of. So she's standing in her kitchen. Forgiveness has been what she's breathing, the air she's been breathing for weeks. And she looks at a bell pepper. Bell pepper in the vegetable bowl on the counter. And she says, oh, that's it. Forgiveness looks exactly like the bell pepper that's sitting on my kitchen counter, an intertwining of equals. Forgiveness looks like this. Or how about the glory that comes from forgiving, from reconciliation, relationships being reborn, rising up from the ashes, looks like this. And from my daughter, who I never really know what to expect. She lives in the house, but I have no idea what goes through her mind, so I was really interested, excited to see what she crafted and created when she imagined forgiveness. And I haven't spoken to her about this yet, but I see a jewel. I see a jewel glowing in the midst of a field of wrath and anger and hatred. Forgiveness is like that glorious blue jewel. I told Brenda that I was going to preach on Leviticus. And she says, oh, of course, that's where I stop every time I try to read the Bible all the way through. Which about 85% of people say that's true. So I offer you the perspective. If you get stuck at Leviticus, get a really good commentary to guide you through, because it is the most important book in the Hebrew Scriptures. Ask any Jew, what's the most important book in our Scriptures? And they will tell you Leviticus. Leviticus is how we build a relationship with God. It's how we establish and maintain a relationship with God and with each other. Chapter 5 of Leviticus. Not if, but when. When you come to realize that you have hurt someone. When you come to realize that you have damaged relationship with someone. Again, not if, but when you come to realize this, confess. The very first step in reconciliation is confession. Ken did a beautiful job of painting 50% of the act of forgiveness. Letting the pain go. People who don't deserve to be forgiven, letting them stop owning us. Cutting the chains and breaking away from the slavery of anger and hatred. That's 50% of it. We are all culpable. The first step in restoring a relationship is confessing. Chapter 6. After you have confessed to your neighbor the wrong that you have done, repair the damage. Leviticus gives us a very specific way to repair the damage. Pay 1.5 times the value of whatever it is you broke. If that's a relationship, imagine having to outpour 1.5 times the love that the other person has given us. To overwhelm that person with love. And then, only after confessing, only after making reparations, then go to the priest who will take your offering and extend it to God. One of the most powerful gifts that Jesus has given us, is the elimination of the intermediary. Al was telling me this morning about praying. Oh, I've got this friend who's got a direct line to God. And his wife said, oh no, you've got a direct line to God. We do. We don't have to go ask a priest to pray for us. But we do have to confess and we do have to work on the reconciliation. And that is the analog I'm going to offer you today. Squares of paper. Special paper. We've done this before. Maybe you remember this paper. This paper melts, evaporates, well, dissolves into water. Two steps, two parts for this piece of paper. The first, I confess. I will do. Brenda taught me the Gallup Strength Assessment, the power of the Gallup Strength Training. She was certified last year, took me through Gallup Strength Training, took me through the assessment, and we both started laughing about how closely it identified us, and we started laughing about all the ways that it could be used in helping restore marriages. We did that. Well, we've been working on that work. But one of the powers of the strengths assessment is there's 34 strengths. Some of us have strengths at 34 that we just can't grow. All of us, actually, the strengths at the bottom, we're not going to grow, so don't spend too much time there. Mine's harmony. Number 34 for me is harmony. You would think a pastor might not be all that appropriate of a skill set to have no harmony. I like conflict. I don't mind pushing people. I drive. So this week, I have to repair a relationship with Maribel, our communication director, because I pushed her, and I pushed her, and I pushed her, and I broke our relationship. That's the work I have to do this week. What work do you have to do? As we come forward for communion today, we are coming to the altar that Jesus prepared for us. This week is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the Day of At-One-ment, the day in which all of the Jewish people confess the ways they've separated themselves from God and each other for the past year. And they bring that confession and those works of forgiveness to the synagogue. And they leave clean, brand new. We can do the same today. As we come forward to the altar, to the meal that Christ has prepared for us, bring your confession and your desire for forgiveness and drop it into the living waters so we will be washed clean, washed anew.
Thanks again for joining us on the Gathering Podcast. If you're in the Northwest Arkansas area, come and join us for worship at First United Methodist Church in downtown Bentonville. We have services at 8:30, 8:45, 9:45, and 11 o'clock each Sunday morning. Grace and peace, y'all.